Welcome to Your Shift Matters Podcast, where we inspire you to make a powerful, positive shift in your life, one episode at a time. Join us as we share inspirational stories about overcoming unimaginable challenges, making a powerful shift in life,
and going from rock bottom
to rock star. If you're ready to rock your mojo, then turn up the volume and tune in.
Here's your revolutionary leadership coach and host,
Dana Zarcone.
Unknown beliefs that were holding me hostage, just like the alcohol held me hostage, just like the depression would hold me hostage.
Hey, hey, Shift Creators, I'm Dana Zarcone, your host, and I want to thank you for joining me for this episode of Your Shift Matters. Today, I have a guest that's going to talk about her experience of growing up as a little girl and feeling like she never fit in. In fact, feeling as if she simply wasn't enough, and as a result, she struggled with a lot of pain, hurt, anguish, and despair. Her story is so inspirational that she's being featured in my upcoming book, Your Shift Matters, Breakdown to Breakthrough, that's coming out on September 27th, 2017. If you ever feel like you didn't fit in, or you weren't enough, or didn't matter, then this is an episode you don't want to miss. So grab your favorite beverage, kick back, relax, and tune in while I talk to my dear friend and inspirational coach, Susan Bach. Susan Bach is a leader in the field of creating transformational results for women entrepreneurs who are working too hard for disappointing results. Her clients include struggling solopreneurs and seasoned entrepreneurs wanting to scale their business up or down. Her genius is helping clients navigate out of the quicksand of the daily grind that's robbing them of their passion. Using her Make More by Working Less proprietary program, clients discover the magic to monetize their genius, minimize the amount of time spent working, and maximize their freedom and fun factor. So please, all the listeners, please join me in welcoming Susan to the show. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Dana. This is so cool. I was listening to you read that intro, and thank you for your kind words, reading the bio, and there was a piece of me that was saying, I really would like to meet that person.
It is always very strange when you're hearing yourself being talked about right in front of you, isn't it?
Yes. I will admit that there still is some discomfort with that.
Oh, it's very humbling, I think, right?
Yes.
Yes. And I have to say, though, I'm so happy that you've chosen to join me on the show and that you've chosen to be a part of this book, because your story is something that so many people struggle with and aren't necessarily willing to admit. And that's the feeling that they're not enough. They feel that they don't fit in. They're not enough, perhaps that they don't even matter. And it's really a very hard place to be. And it can really sabotage our ability to live our life all in and full out. And I know that you have dealt with this firsthand. So I'm so blessed that you're willing to come on the show and share your experience and your struggle with this. So hopefully you can inspire a lot of our listeners to make the shift that you've made. So thank you so much for joining us.
And I appreciate the opportunity, Dana, because this isn't a topic that is general conversation.
For sure.
People just aren't really interested, I will say, in going there, unless you're like myself, who is a self-help junkie.
Right.
And after reading about every self-help book that there is that's ever come out, and self-help assessments, and all this self-work, that's what I had to go through to literally get comfortable in my own skin. Because growing up, feeling like I didn't ever fit in, that I wasn't enough, that I didn't matter, was like wearing a garment that was too tight. It was stifling for me. It was constricting. It always left me feeling kind of uncomfortable physically, as well as this emotional or spiritual component, that I was just wandering in this wasteland of, where do I belong? And that was a pretty cumbersome question for a five-year-old to ask themselves. I remember very vividly sitting at, I think it was a Thanksgiving table, actually. It was extended family, so it was a huge event, big Midwest family. And looking around at the other people sitting at that table thinking, I really don't fit in. And that was such an empty feeling when I'm sitting there surrounded by people who are family and love and an abundance of food. And here we are celebrating Thanksgiving. And I was just left with this sense of, I'm not enough and I don't fit in. And it was just a horrible feeling. And I became accustomed to that feeling. I would say that that's probably one of the tragedies. First of all, being aware of having that sensation and that sense of being, and then sadly becoming accustomed to it. Does that make sense?
Oh gosh, that so makes sense. And you know, it's interesting too, because when you're that young, for you to remember kind of the moment when you took on that belief that I'm not enough, that's huge, because a lot of people have these subconscious beliefs about themselves and really can't put their finger on where on earth it came from. It just, and most of them don't even know they have that unconscious belief in the first place. So it's really very interesting to know that you had the experience. You can kind of remember where you formed that. And how did you feel in that instance? That must have been, I mean, you were so young. Could you recall the pain that you were feeling as you were buying into this belief?
Absolutely. It's still so vivid for me. It was a tremendous sense of sorrow and sadness. And it was a not knowing. Now, remember, this is a vocabulary of a five-year-old and the emotional ability of a five-year-old. And all I wanted to do was sob, because I did not know how to overcome the feeling. I didn't know what to do to fit in. I had no mechanism to have a conversation with myself and say, you know, you are enough. You do fit in. You do matter. That voice was non-existent in my thinking at the time.
Right. Of course it is. And you know why? Because it's like from 0 to 7, everything is being formed, right? And you don't have the ego strength yet to counter direct that belief that's being formed and say, no, that's ridiculous. Of course you matter. You know, when we're older, we can kind of bargain and rationalize with ourselves. But when you're that young, you're getting these signals from your environment that, whoa, I'm not enough. And you adopt that belief as truth. And then you wind up living with that truth the whole rest of your life until you decide to crack that code, right?
That's exactly right. And to your point, Dana, not only did we live with that truth, in our living, we seek to reinforce the truth. We're constantly seeking situations or environments where it reinforces that, you know, you really don't matter. You really aren't enough. And these can be situations that for someone else could be a very inspiring or encouraging moment. For example, when a teacher or a parent is having a conversation about, you did fine with this, or you could have done better if you would have blah, 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 giving us the opportunity to learn. For some people, example, my sister, she accepted that as a very positive learning situation that, okay, and the next time she would do it differently. Whereas for me, my filters said, I wasn't enough. I did it wrong. And so they're finding criticism with it, and they're telling me that I could have done it better.
Right. Yeah. And then to your point, when you are believing something like that, like that's a belief that you created based on experiences that you had, right? You had these experiences, and now all of a sudden the belief that you created was, I'm not enough.
Yes.
And then that belief becomes a subconscious belief that you're not even really conscious of anymore, because it's so ingrained in your mindset, DNA, if you will, that now you organize your life around looking around, trying to be enough, right? You're wanting to be enough. Okay, now since I don't believe I'm enough, I'm going to organize around trying to feel like I'm enough. But yet, because that's your belief that you're not enough, you're going to be attracting experiences that just prove that belief to be true.
Exactly.
Exactly, right?
It's so complicated. That's it, exactly.
So how did you see this play out in your life then?
The first ramification, if you will, I would say was at the age of 12 when I went into a clinical depression. Now, at that age, and at that time in the, that would have been early 60s, it wasn't thought of that a child would have clinical depression. It just wasn't on the radar. And so it went untreated. And once again, for me, that just reinforced that I didn't fit in, that there was something wrong with me. Everyone around me seemed to be functioning just fine, and I was falling apart. And there was no attention given to it. There was no treatment. There was no understanding, if you will, on behalf of my family, or in this case, it would be school and siblings and I'll say teachers, because I was falling apart in school every day. There was no treatment for it, no acknowledgement, no recognition. And I had to come up with my own way of kind of coping with this. So the first manifestation was the depression. And I suffered for depression for the next 30 years. Mm-hmm. Various episodes where at times I literally could not get out of bed. It would just be that debilitating. Then I would say as time progressed, as my coping mechanisms developed, and I became more and more aware consciously of the feelings of not being enough, that led me in college to start drinking excessively, because at least when I was under the influence of alcohol, I didn't feel anything.
Mm-hmm,
or
right.
if I could even feel neutral, I could almost feel good.
Mm-hmm.
It just put a quietness over that chaos that I was living with internally. And the alcohol just kind of numbed everything out. Well, growing up in a family where there was no alcohol, my parents didn't drink, their friends didn't drink. I had no concept of what alcohol was. From the very first time I had a drink in college, I drank alcoholically. There's no other way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
That was just another mechanism for me.
Sure.
And as time went on, behaviors that I would engage in were all engaged in to help me feel better, or at least numb the pain.
Mm-hmm.
One of those two. It's feel better, yeah, or at least quiet it for a while. It was,
yeah,
an escape, Dana.
Well, and you know, the being 12 and being presumably clinically depressed, that's very young. Unfortunately, it's so common these days. It's really a shame that's becoming the norm. But so to be that young and then to not get the help that you need and to have it be kind of business as usual, that was one of those proving points, wasn't it? That you didn't matter. You're not enough. Because,
absolutely.
Well, you may be depressed, but just suck it up and let's keep moving forward. And you needed help and you didn't get it. So it's one of those pivotal points of I'm not enough. You weren't worth the effort.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And I can vividly remember both my mom and my dad saying, you just need to suck it up and get over it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to a 12-year-old who's already in intense pain, that was a pretty harsh message to receive. I think not necessarily that my parents were intending to be harsh.
Right.
They just didn't know any other way. It's like you just get over it and move on, whatever it was.
Right. It's like, put your big girl panties on and you can handle this. Right?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I'm thinking, it just kind of just sparked a memory of mine being 12 and feeling, you know, as you and I have talked about before, my biggest thing was I don't matter, right?
Yes.
That's my biggest thing that I had to deal with in my life. And I remember going through what I did not even recognize as a depression until much later in my life. But I would hide chocolate covered cherries underneath my bed. Like, we would get off the bus at this corner grocery store at school, and I would always stop at the grocery store and I would buy myself a box of chocolate covered cherries to soothe myself. And my intent was I would give myself just one chocolate covered cherry a day, but at least I had a treat I could hide under the bed, because my mom always was very hard on me about my weight and stuff like this, right? So that's a whole other episode, body image issues I had. Mm. But I used to hide this under my bed, and lo and behold, it never lasted me, you know, it should have lasted me a couple of weeks, and it lasted me maybe 1-2 days at the most. I would plow through that whole box. That was depressive emotional eating for sure. So I completely understand what it's like to get to be that and feel so alone, like nobody understands you, and much less even acknowledge that you're in so much pain.
Oh, and Gina, as I hear you share that story, my heart just aches for that 12-year-old. I can feel your pain.
Yeah, even talking about it, it's pulling up a little emotion, like that little girl.
Oh.
Who just felt so unloved, like she
unloved
didn't matter,
and not understood. I think that was so important to me. the people that you see in your life as the authority figures that are the adults that are supposed to understand you, for them not to understand. Mm. That was so disappointing to me.
Absolutely. It's very tough to feel that way. And again, this is such a topic that's so important for us to be discussing, because we all have these limiting beliefs. We all have this garbage that we've bought into, right? That these beliefs that we actually created ourselves, mm-hmm. that we're organized our life around, that are inhibiting our ability to be successful and sabotaging our lives, and we never discuss it. I mean, I discuss with my clients because they're my clients, right? It's part right. of my process with them. But to have these open discussions and know that every one of us deals with some type of self-limiting belief that is holding us back, and I think it's such an important discussion. And to your point, if we don't deal with it, we wind up doing things like anesthetizing, like overdrinking, or looking for other addictions like sex, drugs, porno, whatever it is.
Absolutely.
Your choice for the anesthesia just happened to be alcohol. And that must have been effective at first, and then eventually that must have taken a toll on you.
Oh, it did. Not only on me, but on every relationship, working situations. It totally compromised my life. And again, yet one more reason for me to feel like I wasn't enough, because see, I couldn't even control my drinking. It just turned into such self-defeating behavior.
Oh, that's a good point, because I was thinking about that when you're talking about your story about all this drinking and your family, knowing your family drank. Well, there you go. You're not enough. They're all pure by not drinking or having any of those issues, and you're not enough. You're the black sheep that had the drinking issues.
Exactly.
Wow. So how you've struggled with that for how long?
Oh, I drank alcoholically until I was in my 30s, and then was able to put together 11 years of sobriety. And then, as you'll often hear in alcoholics, I decided I was cured. Uh-huh. And so I started drinking again, and I went out for 5 years, and it was the worst 5 years of my life. It was just, if I thought it was bad before I went into the program the first time, when I went back out, it was equally bad, if not worse. So finally, I realized that it was time for me to get professional help. I checked myself into a treatment center in January of 1999. And thank God, since then, I've not found a reason or excuse to have a drink.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm so proud of you. And I think that whole reaching out for professional help, even though it's something that you definitely needed to do, did you find that to be a difficult step?
Yes and no, Dana. It was something I knew that I had to do. So there was the intellectual decision of you need to do this. And then there was the emotional component that was absolutely frightening. Mm. I was so scared. Because here was my thinking. I'll show you how skewed it was. I thought, if you take the alcohol away, I am nothing. What am I going to have as a coping mechanism? How am I going to function?
Wow.
And I had no idea what I was going to find. So that was perhaps the most frightening part, mm-hmm. is the not knowing what I was going to discover in this process. And so often I've seen that debate, if you will, that fight, in people that I've worked with in recovery in the last 18 years, and also still within myself, is this schism that occurs between our mental, intellectual knowing, knowledge, and understanding, and the emotional component that oftentimes has a vastly different sense, and trying to build the bridge between those two, so that we can actually function and bring the two pieces together. And the way I phrase it today is that I used to live my life in pieces. Today, I get to live my life in peace.
Oh, wow. That's well said. That's well said. And you know, you talk about identifying with the alcohol as, you know, being skewed as what would you do without it? And I think that's the whole alcoholism piece of it. It becomes a part of your personality. It becomes a part of who you are every day and how you organize and structure your life, right?
So, oh, yes.
Yeah, I couldn't see that as being skewed at all. I think it's just such a common thing where people identify that. And, you know, when we have all these patterns, they become memorized thoughts, feelings, emotions. It's memorized. It's part of, it becomes part of who we are. And to go through the process of being able to, like you said, look at all these pieces and dismantle that so that then you can be at peace is just absolutely beautiful.
Well, thank you. And that's truly what I could achieve in sobriety. It was the willingness and the desire to go within and uncover these gnarly, uncomfortable, unknown beliefs that truly were holding me hostage. Mm-hmm. Just like the alcohol held me hostage, just like the depression would hold me hostage. I needed to break free from that. And I, again, intellectually knew that the only way I was going to be able to do that would be if I would go within and understand who I was, instead of trying to hide from, cover up from, be someone I'm not, all the other coping mechanisms that we develop over the years. I needed to get in touch with who I really was and honor that person for who she was and where she was, move into acceptance. And with that freedom, I then could step into the comfort and the ease that I sought within myself. So it was no longer an external solution that I had to inhale or consume or, as you said, have sex or go shopping. Or it was no longer an external solution. It became an inside job.
Yes, yes. And I love that you say that too, because as a big junkie of personal development like you, right? because of my own struggles with depression and things, was I would look for the book. I mean, if you look at my office right now, I've got a huge bookshelf and it's full of all nonfiction motivational kind of books. And
yes,
were they great to read? Yes. Did they change me? No. Because the reality is you can take a concept from a book, but it's the inside part that matters. It's identifying the limiting beliefs. What are the memorized emotions? What are the trapped emotions that we have? What energy blocks do we have? What is our belief system that's so ingrained in who we are that's holding us back? Reading all these books can be great for, I guess what I used to coin as taking the edge off. But they aren't the sustainable solution. And you have to look within yourself. As you said, it's an inside job to find that sustainable solution and truly make that shift. Here we talk about the shift, right?
Yes. And for me, going within was the most frightening thing I could do, because you see, I wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm. Right?
To come back to that. Regardless of what I did, it wasn't enough. Well, here I am saying I need to go within, when I'm already of the mindset that I'm not enough. And coupled with this belief was another belief that I formed from, again, a very early age, and that was that I was a coward. Now, the reason I labeled myself that is because I was always fearful. I would say that looking back, that now goes hand in hand with not being enough. Mm-hmm. Is if I don't feel like I fit in, I'm going to be fearful or apprehensive or uncomfortable in social situations. So fear had become my constant companion. Well, with that, and I'm labeling myself a coward, here I am now as an adult saying, and you want me to go within?
Right. Yes.
So where am I going to find the courage to go within? Well, as it was explained to me, and I literally owe my life to this person, is they said to me, there probably isn't a soldier on the battlefield who isn't afraid, who doesn't have some fear. However, they take action anyway, and that makes them very courageous. So that gave me a concept that I could wrap my head around and say, oh, so I can be fearful or have fear, take action anyway, and then I'm no longer a coward. Now I have courage. So it wasn't that I needed to not be fearful. It became take action anyway, And then you can be courageous. And with that, I was able to think of myself differently, remove the label of being a coward, and say, I can take action anyway. So the fear was no longer debilitating for me. That became my breakthrough, is I could break through the fear, break through the barriers that were holding me hostage, captive, mm-hmm. and say, there is so much more to me when I have the courage to look within. It's so much more to see.
Oh, yeah. And I guess for a minute, I want to go back to what it is that you're afraid of to look within, right? Because a lot of people are afraid to look within. We are the professional, the whole motivational junkies and all this kind of stuff. Because mm-hmm. looking in is the last place we want to look, right? Because you're kind of afraid what you're going to find. And when you're thinking with dealing with something about I'm not enough, mm-hmm. do you think the fear and the resistance was that if you looked within, you would actually find out that that might indeed be true?
Oh, absolutely. It would just validate it one more time. Mm. We'll be looking into a deep well. It was just black and hollow. There's nothing there.
Right.
That's what I was really fearful of, is I wouldn't find anything.
Right.
And what I discovered was a treasure trove of myself that I never knew existed. I had never acknowledged it. I didn't understand it. I didn't appreciate it. I didn't even know it was there. And that's where I became comfortable. So when I was comfortable with myself, comfortable within, amazingly, Dana, I began to fit in every place I went.
Yeah.
When I was enough.
Say that again.
I was enough.
I love it. I love it. And they always say that when you're comfortable within, you won't ever do without.
Oh, I haven't heard that. I have to write that one down. That's very good.
Isn't that good? I love that because it's so true. And I think the thing that people can get hung up on is, what does it mean to look within? But I don't know what to do. They want a step-by-step instruction manual and this kind of stuff. And it really is such a personal, intimate process that you go through, don't you think?
I do. And can I take a minute and share you the process that I went through?
Oh, we'd love that. Yes.
Oh, great. So the first thing I did was stopped and listened to the 24/7 chatter that went on between my two ears, which I came to refer to as my head committee. I really listened to this head committee. And I'll tell you, it was not inspiring. It wasn't encouraging. It wasn't supportive. It was judgmental, harsh, and critical. And as I really listened to those thoughts, like, how many times did I hear myself say, Susan, you idiot, how could you do that? Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, I'm actually saying those words to myself.
Right. You're an idiot because you're not enough, right? How
yes.
could you do that? Because you're not enough.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Fill in the blank. So that was the first thing, was really listening to that and saying, that may have governed my life for the first 30 or 40 years. It no longer has a space or a place in my life. In my future, I do not want that head committee governing every decision, every action. I don't want to listen to it 24/7. So to the degree that I could, Dana, I tuned into each voice and put a face to it, and then I fired them. I literally fired them. This is, I said, thank you very much for your 20 or 30 years of service. You are no longer needed.
Oh, wow.
Now, and
the faces that you saw, were you attaching the was it faces of people you knew or just...
In some cases. In other cases, it was a figure or a caricature, something gotcha. Out of, it could have been a very gruesome monster out of
yeah.
some TV show. But there, I did make a connection with it because for me, I'm a very visual person. I needed to see it. I could hear the voice, so there was the auditory component, but I needed to see it.
Right.
And with that I could literally look them in the eye and say, you no longer have a space or a place in my life. That you just don't get to live for free in my head anymore.
Love it.
And I hired, because I knew I had to fill the void, otherwise those voices would come back up. So I hired a new cheerleading squad. And I picked four people, no more than four. In this case, they were real people that at various points in my life had been there for me in an inspiring and encouraging capacity that gave me strength and belief to continue. Mm-hmm. And those four voices are the ones that I wanted present with me. Those are the voices that I wanted to become my head committee. That's what I listened to. So that was the first component, was really listening to what I was saying to myself. The second component was understanding that how I was feeling, what I had experienced in my life, and how I dealt with it was in the past. I know more today than I did then when I developed some of these behaviors at the age of 5 or 12 or 18.
Yeah.
I could make different choices today. So it was a matter of understanding that I was doing the best I could at the time, and now I had different choices. I could make different decisions. And the third piece of it for me was appreciating that I really could be more than what I was. I really could step into the being, the person that I'd always dreamed of being, that it was there for me. That was a possibility. I could do that, Dana.
It's seeing that possibility that is the most important part, though, of that step, don't you think? That knowing that
absolutely.
It's attainable.
And believing it.
Yeah.
Believing it. Believing that I had suffered enough. I had paid the price. Because to that point, you and I have talked about before, one of the many addictions I had is I had become addicted to suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was a struggle. That was hand in hand with not being enough. I had to work extra hard. I had to do this. It was a struggle. Well,
right.
When I was able to untangle that belief, suddenly life became much easier.
Right. Isn't that great to be able to identify all these things and, like you said, kind of disempower them so that you can clear the path for something so much more amazing and aligned with your highest good?
So much so. Yes. Thank you.
That is absolutely wonderful. I love that. And I know that a lot of the story that you share, we've barely covered the surface. And a lot of the story that you've shared is in this book that we are getting ready to publish. And for those of you who didn't hear the intro, it is the Your Shift Matters Breakdown to Breakthrough that's coming out on September 27th on Amazon. And this story, I remember, Susan, when I first read it, I was literally choked up with tears. It was just so beautiful and so inspiring, and you really take the reader through your struggle and how you've overcome it in such a beautiful way. So I just know that your story is going to inspire so many people. So all the listeners out there, please be so inclined to go buy this book, because her story and 24 others are writing amazing stories about their journeys, and it's just a book that you need to have on yourselves if you want to be inspired and motivated. So to heal. And you're just certainly a great example of that. So I just love it.
Oh, thank you, Dana. I'm just thrilled that I am where I am today. And if I can be a brief light, a brief inspiration, even a hint of hope for someone, then my purpose is served.
There you go. So I want to ask you this. So people that do struggle with limiting beliefs, they know they have them. Maybe they haven't really owned up to them for themselves, and certainly probably aren't having conversations over cocktails with their friends about them either. But they know that they're present. They know that their mindset, these beliefs, are really holding them back. This inner critic that, you know, you've had to deal with. What would you tell people? What advice would you give them so that they can make the shift?
Believe that you can. Believe you can. The quote from Henry Ford that is on my computer, it's on my desk, it's everywhere I look, is whether you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're right.
You are right. So true. That's awesome. I love that. And you know, it's interesting, because I was at a mastermind a couple of weekends ago, and the topic of part of our discussions was no matter where you are in your life, you are 100% successful.
That's right.
You are 100% successful because you have created the situation this, you know, whatever kind of life you're living, you're 100% successful. And when you really put it that way, it's like, wow. You know, it's kind of the good news and the bad news, right? That you've created it. But the good news is that you can also get yourself out of it and make that shift. So that's so important.
That's exactly right. Yesterday does not have to dictate tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Oh, I just love it. Well, thanks so much for joining me, Susan. I really appreciate it. It was so enjoyable. You're just
such a great
guest. It always
is with you, Dana. You're just awesome. I love you.
Oh, I love you too. And gosh, everybody, it has been my pleasure to share my dearest friend, Susan, with you. For all of our listeners out there, thank you so much for joining us. And for show notes and other episodes, you can go to yourshiftmatters.com and certainly add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or subscribe in iTunes so you don't miss another inspiring episode. To stay in touch, you can also follow me at Twitter at Dana Zarcone. All links will be in the show notes. So do you want to tell everybody, Susan, how people can get a hold of you?
The easiest way is Susan Bock, SusanBock.com. Then you'll have a contact me page and we're good to go.
Perfecto. I love it. So reach out if you were inspired. She is certainly somebody that's awesome to connect with. So thank you everybody for listening. Until next time, remember to live your life all in and full out. Your shift matters.
That's all for this episode. Thanks for listening to Dana Zarcone and her guests as they inspire you to make powerful, positive shifts in your life and business. Until next time, remember, your shift matters.